It's time for another Wednesday rant. Been way too long since I went off the rails, and I actually have already posted this on my Facebook page, and a bunch of stuff was going on. I didn't think I'd have an opportunity to get behind the microphone today, and this, all of a sudden, the skies cleared, the rain stopped, and all the puzzle pieces fell into place. So while it is on my Facebook page, this is the extended audio version of the Wednesday rant. Let's get to it. All right, I hope this finds you well wherever you're listening in the world. I apologize for the tardiness of this. This should have been up in my brain about 7 o'clock this morning, but I had a lot of moving parts and there's some stuff going on that needed to be taken care of before I got to this. So here I am, like it or not. Now, let me just start with a disclaimer here. I am not a clinical psychologist. I'm not a psychiatrist. I'm not a therapist. I don't even play one on the radio. But what I do have, I believe, that goes for me is common sense for uncommon times. So all that being said, while I am not a verified, degreed expert in PTSD, I am, however, intimately connected to it. It was a condition, really, that I was unaware of until I was hit broadside by a drunk driver back in 1986. And the remnants of that still stay with me at this point in my life, 34 years later. It was a very difficult situation, and it's one that I learned from tremendously. You know, sometimes, as they say, blessings in disguise. The guy that hit us in this car was a drunk driver. He left the scene of the accident. He'd done it before. Months after the accident, I was in the courthouse, and the guy showed up, and the prosecuting attorney said, listen, what you need to do is have him plead guilty so then you could sue him civilly for everything that's happened to you. I was off work. It was a very, very difficult time. I was just newly married. We had a very rough go of it because of this. And it was just 3 weeks after we had been married in 1986. So this was not the way you want to start out. However, it is what it is. I sat in a very hot courtroom, and I waited till the guy got his name called. He got up there, and he judge says, how do you plead? And he said, I plead guilty. And the guy slapped $25 fine for running a red light. Next case. My neck grew about 3 inches. Excuse me? $25 fine? Running a red light? Blasted us at 75 miles an hour in a Cadillac? He'd done this before. He had multiple DUIs. And that's it? And so I stored all that energy. It got shoved down inside me. And around midnight that same day, it all popped. And it was very, very difficult. And if you've ever watched the old Hulk television show where the great late Bill Bixby would say, don't make me angry. You wouldn't like me when I'm angry. Of course, he goes off and gets angrier and angrier and becomes Lou Ferrigno and gets all green, and we know how that turns out. And that's basically what was going on for me, is that I had all this energy that was bouncing around inside of me from a car accident, from just getting married, being laid off work, not to mention the physical stuff, even though I was very, very lucky and fortunate to walk away from that car incident. I didn't see it as an incident right away. It still took a toll on me in very many ways that I could never have predicted. So that was actually my second near-death experience. I call them near-life experiences, really, because even though I had no pulse and they covered me up and they had to cut me out of the car, the appreciation that I have for being alive comes out of nearly dying or being dead with no pulse for an indeterminate amount of time. And on top of the one that happened when I was 19 and got electrocuted, I've had about a frickin' enough of this stuff. So anyway, all that was pulsing around inside of me, and it exploded, and I ended up at a place called Sheridan Road Hospital here in Chicago early that morning, and I'll never forget being led into the room by these orderlies, and they put me in this room, and they took my belt away, my shoelaces, anything I could do myself harm with, and there was a totally normal-looking guy in the room. This is your roommate, Chuck. And I said, okay, we're sitting there. And he's like, nice to have you. I know, you know, this is a difficult time. I'm thinking maybe he works here and he's, you know, like helping me out. And it turns out everything was going fine. And still he started to talk to the chair in the room like it was a dog. I shit you not. So I didn't sleep that night. I sat myself in the corner. And I thought, how the hell did I go from, I guess, the all-American guy at that time? I was just 27 years old and had everything going for me, and all of a sudden, here's this huge bomb that drops out of nowhere in the presence of a Cadillac and a drunk driver with multiple DUIs. The next day, they put me in a room with a bunch of other people for observation. So if you've ever seen One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, it wasn't quite that, but that's what was going through my mind. And I really was just astounded at sitting in this room with all these people who were talking to things that weren't there and chewing on their fingernails or somebody else's fingernails. And I basically sat in the corner with my back to the wall to take on all comers if they showed up. I didn't know what the F was going on. So after about 4 hours in there, they realized I probably don't belong in there. And they came and got me out. And they were taking me from that place in that room up to a different room where I would be by myself. They could start helping me out. And there was these 2 6-foot-8 guys, one on each side of me. Both looked like offensive linemen for the Chicago Bears. And they literally had their hands, one on each. Now listen, I'm not a small guy, but I look like a midget compared to these two. And they both had their hands on my shoulders. And the one guy on my right says, John, do you hear any voices? And I so wanted to say, oh, yeah. I hear. Don't you hear him? I knew if I'd have said that, I probably wouldn't have been getting out anytime soon. But I didn't say that. I kept it to myself, and they put me in a room. And in a very short time, I was diagnosed with PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. And what happens to the central nervous system of a human being when it gets on overload and can't handle it anymore. And everybody does it different. Some people just totally shut down and sit in the corner and don't talk for 6 months. And then you got people like me who are the Hulk, apparently. So I know what that's like, and I know what it took me to work out of that. And I'll tell you, you know, some point in your life, people say, would you change anything? There's some things I'd like to skip. The lessons that came from them, the growth that came from them, you know, I'm good with that. But, you know, yeah, I mean, you don't want to be blasted by a drunk driver. It's not a hell of a lot of fun. You don't want to be electrocuted when you're 19. Not a good time. But those are the part of the puzzle of my life. And so I've gone through those things and I've done my very utmost to work through them and not get stuck into them. So there's things that happen to you and then there's things that happen through you. And the things that happen to you tend to make us victims. And the things that happen through us tend to make us participants. And then we can work our way out. At least that's how it was for me. But post-traumatic stress disorder is a mental health condition, as I mentioned. It's triggered by these terrifying events. Experiencing it, witnessing it, symptoms, flashbacks, nightmares, severe anxiety, as well as uncontrollable thoughts about the event. For years, not so much anymore, but for years, my left peripheral vision was like, you know, on high alert all the time. If I saw a bug out of the corner of my eye, I was turning already because that's the side that I was hit on in the vehicle. And they prescribed for me in the room there after we talked and said, well, this is what's wrong with you and here's what the deal is. Maybe with some therapy and a lot of medication, you'll be all right. So here's a huge bottle of Xanax and take those when you feel like there's some stuff coming on. And of course I did for a while and it really didn't help. It just delayed things. So most people eventually work through that. It's a temporary thing, but some people not. To this day, I know what the triggers are for me. I work diligently to take 3 deep breaths and pull back. Anybody that knows me from my days playing semi-pro football or college football or working in a bar, you know, those were outlets for my anger. And I got to watch when I put myself in positions where it's possible that, you know, the Hulk may come out again. So anyway, the difficult part for all of this, of course, is for me as a veteran, is that PTSD is a leading contributor to the 22 veterans that take their own lives every day. That's 8,030 veterans commit suicide every year. The ongoing ripple effect of pain to their family and their friends because of that, it just wreaks havoc. You know, so I'm not here to pass any judgment on that. I'm saying, you know, we talk about, you know, serious issues in our country and everybody wants veterans treated better. And every day, 22 veterans take their lives because they're unable to deal with the impact of all that. And it's heartbreaking. And listen, the headlines are full of shit every day, but doing 22 push-ups for the awareness of veterans that are taking their lives doesn't change the fact that veterans take their lives. So eventually, since that incident so many, many years ago, I learned so much about myself in this inner compass that we all have but rarely use. That became the key in managing my PTSD. Eventually, as I said, I went from victim to participant, and then it was taking on my own self-care. Interestingly enough, when I got electrocuted when I was 19, I was done. I mean, I was even more done than this car accident. I had no pulse whatsoever. I was so hot, I was blue. The buttons blew out of my shirt, the eyelets out of my shoes. You know, the cross that my grandmother had given me burned into my chest. The watch blew up, the whole thing. It was really bad. And I was brought back to life by a guy named Mike, who was the pharmacist, who happened to be working late at the Osco drugstore that I worked at. So that was really, really difficult. But once I was able to work myself out of that, that I was electrocuted and my hand was shredded and my heart was all over the place. And to this day, I still have white dots. You can play Connect the Dots on my body where the heat went and the electricity went through me. Once that I got past that speed bump of shit, look what happened to me, and I moved on to look what I can make happen. There's a huge difference there. When you shift from look what happened to me, when you get out of that, when you cross the bridge to, oh, look what I can make happen from that, everything changes. It doesn't happen overnight, but it does start to change. And so that self-care I did when I was 19, in the bedroom, in the bathroom, at our house on Berto Avenue, it basically became a little pharmacy. I did, you know, I was cleaning dead skin off my hands. I had third-degree burns. It was quite a project, but I took care of that. And so much of it goes back to something that was said to me in the hospital when I got electrocuted. And it was a woman who went to the same high school I did. She graduated a year before I did, but she was our football manager my junior year. Name's Lori. And quite frankly, she doesn't remember that at all, saying this to me. But you know, there are times when the bell goes off and you don't forget. And I have a really good memory for things. And she walked in one day when my burns were getting cleaned in the hospital. Very pretty nurse was cleaning and debriding my wounds, and I was okay with that. You could do that for another 5 years as long as, you know, they're paying the bills at Osco drugstore. And she came in, she was a dietitian, and she came in, and she was so surprised to see me. We, you know, it wasn't like we hung out. She was a year older than me, but she was the manager on our football team, one of them. And when the young lady left after cleaning me up and rewrapping all my burns and everything, she said, John, until you take ownership of the pain, you will never heal. Whoa. Until you take ownership of this pain and what's going on here, you will never heal. I mean, the wounds would close, but inside I'd be screwed. It was a very profound thing that she said to me so many years ago. So when we jump forward to this car accident, I had the same bridge to cross, but this time it was mostly mental. You know, for a year, I was unable to sleep with the lights off. I had to watch Back to the Future every single night until I fell asleep. It's a very difficult time. And so I got to a point where these Xanax pills are not going to make me better. They're just going to delay what's coming, and it's going to go on and on and on. So I have to get inside this. And being the gym rat that I am and been lifting weights since I was 14 years old, we have these 7-foot bars that are used for weight training and stuff like that. And I would mentally sit down. And by this time, I was working overnights at the Ramada Hotel O'Hare, and it was great because I could walk all night and walk off my angst and my PTSD and be by myself for the most part. It was great. And I would sit up on the roof of the Ramada Hotel O'Hare. I don't know, it was 12 stories up, 8 stories up, whatever. And I would mentally picture the bar being bent when I could feel this anxiety coming on me. I would mentally picture this bar being bent in so many, like a pretzel, shapes, you name it. And I just kept bending it, bending it, bending it until, and I would put all the energy into that thought of bending that bar until the feeling started to leave me. And sometimes I did it 20, 30 times a night. I had to stop what I was doing and bend that bar in my mind before that. And you know what happened? Eventually, I guess I kind of gained new brain neurons or something where when the feeling came, I was okay. I knew I could get through it because I had this safety valve. I could use this mind game of bending and unbending that bar. So eventually, you know, I went to the shrink and said, you know, these Xanax, you could use these as a frickin' suppository. I'm done with that. I found my way out by going in. So with all that being said, I'm pretty qualified to make the following statement. It's my observation, experience, and opinion that most of us in America, if not around the world, but for sure here in the USA, have some level of PTSD as our central nervous systems are overloaded, saturated, bludgeoned, beaten, and hammered into submission with headlines of virus, body count, murders caught on camera, riots, looting, protests. That's just the recent stuff. Put that on top of the usual mayhem and chaos that humans seem to love to create. But The new term for me, PTSD, isn't post-traumatic, but rather present tense stress disorder. There's not even enough time to have post-traumatic. We don't have enough time to catch our breath even before the next lower level human behavior hits our newsfeed, our phone, the television, whatever, along with it differing opinions about all of it, which then, of course, leads to Jaws. Not the shark, but kind of along the same lines, or just arguing with strangers syndrome that then in turn adds fuel to the molten lava of fodder melting down our brainstem and putting our emotional circuits into overdrive, which of course leads to blowing out the fuse box of functionality. It's not good. And then shit really starts to hit the fan, which of course tends to begin to land on unintended targets, family, friends, strangers, others. They're all on the receiving end of our unprocessed anger and angst over things we have apparently zero control over. It's like hitting yourself with a hammer over and over and over again and saying, man, that sure hurts, but you get so numb, you just keep doing it. However, I believe there's an effective prescription to lessen the impact of present tense stress disorder. Now, we all learned this in grammar school during a fire drill. Stop, drop, and roll. Stop. The fire-affected person's got to stop, ceasing any movement which would fan the flames or hamper those attempting to put the fire out. Drop. The fire-affected person's got to drop to the ground, lying down if possible, covering their face with their hands to avoid facial injury. And roll. The fire-affected person must roll on the ground in an effort to extinguish the fire by depriving it of oxygen. You remember this? We all did it. Either that or you're hiding underneath your desk back in the day because you're worried about the bomb dropping. But either way, you had a fire drill, and we all learned stop, drop, and roll. The virtual flames that are consuming us 24/7, 365, as we keep pouring gas on the fires of life, can suck the life out of you as sure as those that are started with a match. So, some of the symptoms of present tense stress disorder include the following, but are not limited to mind fog, shortness of breath, you start being abrupt with people you normally wouldn't be, sleeplessness, headaches, neck pain, and I think the big one is a serious pain in the ass about all that's going on in the world that you can't do a thing about. So, once again, the most effective way to put out the fire that's attempting to burn you alive, stop, get out of the flames, leave all the chaos and virtual landfill of Facebook or the internet, turn off your computer, don't be looking for iPhone updates, turn the TV off, anything else that is the spear point of irritation. Don't worry now. It's all good because the shit show will continue without your opinions and retorts just fine. Then you got to drop out of sight for a while. Cover your face from all things of a lower vibration, all the arguing and the angst and the BS. Cover that so you don't have any further spiritual injury. And then roll into something that lifts you up. Music, books, movies, take a walk, gardening, cut the grass, doesn't matter. You have to replenish your burned out adrenal glands that were never designed to constantly work overtime dealing with MBS, manufactured bullshit, without taking a break. As the late great Bucky Fuller said, it's obvious, that technology is surpassing our humanity. All these devices that are so cool and bring everything to us instantly, they basically have us tethered electronically to news that repeated diminishes our humanity and slowly suffocates our spirit, in my opinion. Every single generation has its tests. History is filled with upheaval, destruction, horror, and loss. But we forget all that because we don't like to look back. As I always say, history is a great teacher. We're just shitty students. So in the gaps between all that stuff, we have to live our lives to the utmost. Try to find our higher self, then higher ground, where our perspectives can change, and then it brings relief to the damage done to our hearts and our minds. What you focus on expands. So you got to be careful what you pay attention to, because you'll end up paying more ways than you can possibly imagine. So if you find yourself arguing with people you don't know, or even you do know, over whose lives matter the most, more than someone else, getting totally bent out of shape by what's going on in the oval orifice, Get out of the pool. Dry off, take 3 deep breaths, and remember that your life matters, and it's the only one you even have a modicum of control over. The bottom line, you might not be able to change the world for the better, but you can make damn sure that the world doesn't change you for the worse. And for the record, actually it's a broken record for me because I do this more and more, I've never seen Democrat, Republican, Independent, Liberal, Conservative, or other on a headstone. And since none of us know when our expiration date is, consider that if this is your last day or week or month, how are you going to spend the precious time you have left? The tug of war or stop, drop, and roll? Until next time, safe travels. Adios.